Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:06 a.m. on Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022. Present today, we have Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative LeBon, Vice Chair was here a second ago, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Rasmussen, are you online? Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Co-Chair Merrick, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And this morning, we'll be hearing reintroductions of several bills we considered last session. We'll take public testimony on House Bill 111, which is a bill from Representative Sponholds, Dental Hygienist Advanced Practice Permit. Our time this morning is limited, or it may not be if we've got a technical. So we're hoping to move quickly through these bills. We've considered these bills before. So we'll start with House Bill 54, which is the Invasive Species Management Bill. It's by the House Fisheries Committee. The committee last heard this bill on May 18th of 2021, and amendments were due into Representative Merrick's office by Monday at 6 p.m., so there's one amendment for the committee. So with that said, Representative Tarr, if you and your staff, Mr. Thatcher Brower, could place yourselves on the record and briefly reintroduce the bill.
Thank you. Good morning, co-chairs. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you this morning. I'm Representative Garen Tarr from District 19 in Anchorage.
Good morning, Co-Chair Foster and Co-Chair Merrick. Thatcher Brower, Staff Representative Garen Tarr and House Fisheries Committee.
Just as a brief summary, this bill intends to create an Alaska Invasive Species Council that's housed in the Department of Fish and Game. It's the culmination of about 5 years of work that has evolved from a bill that was originally more about rapid response, because we've learned that the treatments are often necessary immediately to address the problem so it doesn't become worse. But over time, in working with the professionals across the state, have come to realize that we are well positioned, unlike so many other places, to kind of get ahead and stay ahead of the problems that invasive species could present to our state. They could be costly in a number of areas, from impacts to wastewater systems to impacts for travel and float planes and creating unsafe situations for pilots. That could impact tourism. We talked in some of the presentations about potential impact to salmon habitat, and of course, salmon is everything for us across our state. They showed some of the maps, you know, even in areas where we don't have invasive species right now, they've been able to map to find whether the climate is right in those areas for potential invasions. We know we have some areas of strong concern. So this Invasive Species Council envisions a partnership through multi-stakeholder engagement with professionals in the private sector, like the excavators and people doing other development projects, with the government agencies, with the tribal agencies, to be much more efficient and effective with the way we are addressing these issues. We're spending millions of dollars already each year. We think by having the work of this council, we can limit the state spending necessary to address invasive species, because this more coordinated approach will allow for enhanced prevention efforts and keeping the problems at bay, if you will. So that's the goal of this bill. We really appreciate the time that the Finance Committee is giving us this morning so we can bring it back before you, and we're hopeful we'll be able to move it along today. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. So we do have an updated fiscal note. The control code on that is FQWDO. It's a zero fiscal note. It's from the Department of Environmental Conservation. Caroline Schultz from the OMB is available if there are any questions. Are there any questions before we move over to the amendments? I see no questions. So with that, we'll now take up the single amendment that we have. Representative Carpenter, would you like to make a motion?
I move amendment number one.
Okay, we have an objection. Representative Carpenter, if you could describe your amendment.
This amendment creates a 7-year sunset clause for the creation of this organization. And I'm sorry, I'm getting a lot of feedback here, so I'm not going to be able to communicate very well.
Okay, totally understandable. Thank you. So the amendment's been explained, Representative Wool, and then Representative Joseph. And also I'd like to note Representative Edgman has also joined us. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Representative Carpenter said it has a 7-year sunset, but on this amendment it's actually a 5-year. However, I would like to conceptually amend the amendment to make it a 7-year, so the date, the repeal date would be 2029, which is 7 years from now, not 5. And that would give the process, the eradication process, a little longer to take effect. And that was, I discussed this with the bill sponsor, and that was the desired timeline for the sunset is 2029. I don't know if Representative Carpenter is okay with that, but I think he inadvertently said 7 years, but so I will introduce that as a conceptual amendment to the amendment.
Okay. Representative Carpenter, were you able to hear that?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I was able to hear that, and it was an inadvertent miscommunication on my part. The original amendment was for 5 years, and I know that there's a discussion to move it to 7 years. I am not in favor at this time of moving it to 7 years. I would rather keep it at 5.
Okay. So, Representative Wool, you introduced, so that was an official amendment to the amendment, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we will take up discussion of that amendment to the amendment, I think, before we move on to further discussion on the original amendment number one. And Representative Josephson, did you have any comments?
Only that I don't oppose the amendment to the amendment.
Okay. Any further questions? Do we need clarification? So what Representative Wool is doing is moving it to a 7-year instead of Representative Carpenter's 5-year. Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would just like to hear the reason for only 5 years or why 7 years. I mean, I would like an explanation on that and hear a rebuttal.
Okay. And maybe the bill sponsor, curious if you have a position on the 5-year versus 7-year, and if you could explain maybe a little bit about what the impacts are.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I appreciate the opportunity and appreciate the thinking that Representative Carpenter has brought into the conversation. As I had shared at our last meeting in May, you know, the idea of a sunset in itself, I think, is fine. What that does is gives that benchmark for completing work and gives the opportunity for us to evaluate the necessity of continuing to have a particular board or commission. If the work has been completed, right, there's no reason to have one. But if you look at the last part of the bill on pages 5 and 6, it gets into the timing of appointment of members. And so it's gonna take a little bit of time once the bill is passed for the governor to make these appointments. And so they think that, you know, it'll take maybe 1 to 2 years to get all through all of the appointments and kind of get in that rhythm. And then if they could have the 5-year window, then that really works well for the vision of the work that they want to complete. So that's the reason for requesting just that slight bump from 5 to 7 years for the sunset.
Okay. Representative Carpenter, do you have any comments?
I would just say that I believe the assessment that it's going to take 1 to 2 years to get everybody seated and the board actually able to function is an excessive assessment, and I don't believe those figures. So I think that we will be able to get everybody seated and move along, and then be able to assess in 5 years what the benefit of the commission does for us. So that's it.
Okay, thank you. I'd also like to note that we've got Representative Ortiz with us as well. If there's no further comment, we'll vote. I see no further comment. And
on the amendment to the amendment.
On the amendment to the amendment, and I believe Representative Carpenter is objecting to that. So with that, Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll on amendment number, or amendment to the amendment number one.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Edgman. Yes. Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Laban.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Rasmussen. Or is she not online? Okay. Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Wool.
Yes.
Six yeas, one nay. I'm sorry. Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Merrick.
Yes.
Eight yeas, one nay.
Okay, and so on a vote of eight yeas to one nay, Amendment 1 to Amendment 1 has been adopted. And so that takes us to the amendments, which is now adopted, and it's a 7-year sunset. Representative Josephson.
Question for the sponsor. Through the chair, Representative Tarr, I like your bill, and I'd rather it not sunset. Mm-hmm. And my question for you is a scientific one. Mm-hmm. My relatively rudimentary understanding of invasive species is there will be no final end to the problem. Mm-hmm. In that respect, it's sort of like the Suicide Council, unfortunately, mm-hmm. or any number of other councils. Mm-hmm. So why are you comfortable with the amendment as amended?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I really appreciate that question because it's possible that is our scenario and unfortunately what we're going to continue to face with evolving environmental conditions and, you know, sort of people traveling and all the different vectors that bring invasive species. Arctic shipping, for example, is a big looming threat. The thing that happens with the sunset is the audit. And I think, you know, the reason I'm comfortable in this circumstance is that it would be an evaluation of the work. If the membership of the council needed to be changed, it could be recommended at that time. If there were additional staffing needs, if there were, you know, just it would give that refresh. And then one of the things that happens, a lot of these boards and commissions, you know, we rely on the governor to fill those slots. Previously, you know, and I don't want to say this about this governor, but, you know, from time to time, those positions aren't filled in a timely fashion, and it limits the ability of the group to be effective. You know, that would also be found in an audit. If the meeting minutes weren't being posted properly, an audit would show that. So, you know, we wanted to, in talking with the professionals that want to be a part of this effort, you know, give them the time to, you know, show what important work is happening. But then if there are those adjustments, it would give that refresh moment.
Follow
up? The chair, so you're comfortable, Representative Tarr, that if you're not here in 2029, someone will advocate for this council, if need be?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I can guarantee with probably 100% certainty I'm not going to be here in 2029. But I do think there are enough professionals in working on this. It's such an impressive group. And what I think is so amazing about it, you know, the folks that have worked over this multi-year period to help develop this bill is when you sort of translate it to the donation of their professional time, the state is really going to benefit from their participation in this council to help us do this work. So I think it's very exciting. They're you know, very dedicated group of people, and I think we can count on them being around to help us figure things out as we go.
Last question.
Representative Josephson.
One of the repealers is 1620-820, which identifies, I guess, the decal fund as being in the general fund, which means it's subject to sweep. Should we be concerned about that?
Well, through the chair to Representative Josephson, the way it's envisioned to work is recommendations about spending from that fund would come from this group. So if the group is no longer there, then I think then we would move back to what we're doing now, which is just special capital appropriations when there is an outbreak of something that needs to be addressed. You typically see it as a line item to, you know, that particular municipality or organization. So I think it would revert back to that kind of system.
Mr. Chair, I had the objection. I removed my objection.
Okay, the objection has been removed to amendment number 1. And is there any further discussion? Is there any further objection? Hearing no objection, amendment number one has been adopted. So with that, we will now move to the back to the bill itself. And if there are no further amendments and no further discussion, I would entertain a motion to move the bill out of committee, if that is the will of the committee.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 54, version 32-LS0057 /0 from committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note and authorize alleged legal services to make conforming changes.
Okay. Hearing no objection.
Sorry. The script said it, but yes. Mr. Chair.
Okay, so with that, hearing no objection, House Bill 54, version 32-LS0057 /0 has been moved from committee. So with that, we'll take a brief at ease and move to the next bill.
Thank you.
Okay, and House Finance back on record at 9:23 a.m. And next we'll consider House Bill 90, which is Vehicle Rentals and Vehicle Rental Networks by Representative Wool. And the committee last heard the bill on May 13th. Amendments were initially due to Representative Merrick's office by May 15th, and again on Monday at 6 p.m. No amendments were received. And so Representative Wool, if you and your staff, Ms. Ashley Carrick, could put yourself on the record and give us a reintroduction of the bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Representative Adam Wolf from District 5 in Fairbanks. And with me is my staff, Ashley Carrick, who can assist on any questions or has worked on this bill extensively, as have I. A brief overview, HB 90 basically applies an existing tax law that we already have in the state, which is to vehicle rental tax. To private peer-to-peer rental networks. Many of you are familiar with the network, peer-to-peer network called Turo. There are others. And basically, there already is a 10% tax on rental cars in Alaska. So if someone does have a private car that they put up on the Turo site and then rents it to individuals, they are in fact liable for that 10% tax. However, the state doesn't enforce it. There's no way to know who is renting these cars. In years past, the Department of Revenue has asked Turo for a list of names. They, of course, not surprisingly, did not provide that information. There was a court case, but I don't want to go into all the details of a court case from years ago. But basically, this would just apply the same tax to peer-to-peer private rental networks. And the tax would be applied on the app from Turo. The person renting the car, the owner of the car, would not pay the tax. The person renting the car, similar to renting a car from Avis or the traditional brick and mortar places, the person renting the car would pay the tax through the app, and then Turo would reimburse the state of Alaska. in recent years, I think pre-COVID, the rental tax brought about $10 million into the state of Alaska. And since COVID, as many of you may know, rental cars were very scarce, and Turo climbed. The usage of Turo soared, and a lot of times when you go to look for a rentals car, you'd find a lot of Turo and not a lot of traditional rental companies online. So Turo's use has gained. So I can't tell you exactly how many, but I think it would definitely raise several million dollars for the state of Alaska. And the only other analogy I could give is an Airbnb, which is also a private owner renting out part of their house or a cabin or something like that, a dwelling, to an individual and not using a traditional hotel. So Airbnb, which is a peer-to-peer network, they are paying the bed tax in whatever municipality demands a bed tax. So if the hotel pays a bed tax, the Airbnb person also pays a bed tax. This is very similar for the peer-to-peer car rental network. You guys have heard the bill, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. And just so folks know, also available for questions, looks like we've got online Connor Bell, analyst legislative finance, as well as Brian Rothery with Enterprise Holdings.
Mr. Speaker, if I may add,
Representative,
thank you, one more point. The municipality of Anchorage, in addition to the state of Alaska rental tax, also has its own municipal tax. So if you rent a car from, say, Enterprise in Anchorage, you pay the 10% state tax and you pay the 8% municipal tax. Anchorage has passed a law, an ordinance, saying that Turo and other peer-to-peer groups also have to pay their 8% municipal tax. So it's already happening in Anchorage. A person renting a Turo must pay the Anchorage municipal tax, but currently they don't have to pay the state tax because we haven't passed a law requiring it. But this bill will hopefully make a level playing field for everyone around the state and in Anchorage as well.
Okay, great. So with that, again, no amendments were received for this. Do we have any questions regarding the bill itself? Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Out of curiosity, one of the rebuttals that we had sent to us was that RV rentals only pay a 3% tax. And this is quite different as far as how much money it will bring in, but also what people have to pay. An RV rental only paying 3%. Has Turo engaged at all to try to discuss why the disparity? Could there be a compromise in between or anything like that? Is Turo, because they're a national company, the same as Enterprise and others, have they just refused to reply, or has there been an engagement with them where they said, you know, can we compromise in between the 3% and 10%?
Through the chair to Representative Thompson, the 3% RV tax is the state law. So if you rent an RV from an RV company or you do it peer-to-peer, you're still obligated to the 3%. Car rental is 10%. That's just what's in the state law, and I'm not wishing to change that. And if someone rents an RV through Turo, they would be obligated to pay the 3% as opposed to the 10%. So there are different rates for different kinds of vehicles. I don't know why that started in the beginning. So this bill doesn't really touch upon the rates. We just want to apply the Alaska vehicle rental rate, whether it's RV or cars, to peer-to-peer networks. So they would pay the same percentage whether they rent from, there's Outdoorsy is a company that rents RVs peer-to-peer. But if I rent a RV from, say, 1-800-RV, a brick-and-mortar store in Anchorage or something, then I'm assuming they charge a 3%. I hope they are. The 3% to the person renting the car, and this bill would also make a peer-to-peer person charge 3% to the renter. I'm not – the Turo rate would be the same as the equivalent business on state law already. If that makes sense.
Follow up. So the municipality of Anchorage then collects 3% on RV rentals
Through the chair, I know that the municipality has a car rental, a vehicle rental rate of 8%.
A vehicle is an RV, a car.
Well, through the chair, Representative Thompson, for this bill, vehicle has different definitions. I don't know what the municipality of Anchorage does on RVs. The state of Alaska has a 3% RV rate. So if you rent an RV from a company in Alaska, they're obligated to account for that 3% and submit it to the state. And they, I'm sure, charge the person renting the car. I've never rented a car from a company in Alaska, I mean, an RV, I mean. So I can't say how they do it exactly, but it is a state law, and they're liable for it. So I trust if they have a brick and mortar and a business license and all that, that they would be accountable for that 3%.
Okay. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wohl, if House Bill 90 were to pass, you know, as a part of that, is it safe to say that this wouldn't just apply to Turo, but it would clearly apply to other peer-to-peer groups as well, and the, for lack of a better word, the infrastructure would be in place to make sure that we're capturing the other peer-to-peer groups as well as Turo. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, that is correct. I list Turo because it's the most popular one. It's similar to like Uber, and then you have Lyft, and then there's other companies. And there are other peer-to-peer car rental companies besides Turo, but Turo's the biggest one and one I can think of. And I,
thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I see no further. Representative Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to declare a conflict of interest as my family rents our vehicle out as a Turo. Yeah.
Okay, and I technically on the floor, people would object if they wanted you to vote. I don't know what the, I think it's, unless anybody is objecting here, I don't see any issue with you being able to vote on this. So with that, there are no further questions or comments on this bill, then I would.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. House Finance back on record at 9:34 a.m. So with that, I would entertain a motion to move the bill out of committee.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. And House Finance back on record, Representative Ortiz.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 90, version 32-LS0396, /A, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize legal services to make conforming changes.
Okay, is there any objection? Seeing no objection, House Bill 90, version 32-LS0396, /A, has been moved from committee. So with that, we'll take a brief at ease, sign the sheet. Okay, House Finance back on record, and our last bill of this morning is House Bill 111, which is the Dental Hygienist Advanced Practice Permit by Representative Sponholds. Committee last heard this bill on May 15th, 2021. Amendments were initially due to Representative Merrick's office on May 18th, and they were again due on Monday at 6 p.m., and no amendments were received. So Representative Sponholds and your staff, Chelsea Ward Waller, if you could both put yourselves on the record, and if you could briefly reintroduce the bill for us.
Good morning. Thank you for hearing House Bill 111 again. House Bill 11 would create an advanced practice permit for experienced dental hygienists who have 4,000 of hours of clinical experience and who pass an exam approved by the Alaska Board of Dental Examiners. It would essentially allow experienced licensed dental hygienists to provide preventative oral health care to underserved populations at senior centers, healthcare facilities, daycares, schools, and for Alaskans who are eligible for public assistance or homebound or live in rural underserved communities. I think importantly, the bill has been crafted with the support not only of the Alaska Dental Hygienist Association, but also by the Alaska Dental Society, and has the support as well of the Alaska Board of Dental Examiners. So this is a very, this has been a very collaborative process. We've made changes along the way with the support of the dentists. We have available for questions today Dr. Gregory Johnson with the Board of Dental Examiners, Royan Royer, who's the past chair of the Alaska Dental Hygienist Association, and John Zazada with the Alaska Primary Care Association.
Okay, thank you. We do have a amendments. And so maybe we'll take up the amendment first, I think, unless you would prefer that the folks who are online, if that would be helpful for the amendment to take them up first, but otherwise we'll go to the amendment, if that's okay.
Mr. Chair, I apologize, forgot to introduce myself. Got a little comfortable this morning. Representative Ivy Sponholz, House District 16, with me is my aide, Chelsea Ward Waller. And I believe we have a conceptual amendment that is designed to solve a just a technical issue in the bill that we want to fix. We're not looking for testimony from the those that are available for questions. They're just available in case there are questions from anybody.
Great. Okay. So with that, we'll go to the amendments. And Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I offer amendment number one.
Okay. And I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Would you like to explain your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Amendment number one is a simple date change. The bill we heard last year was dated to take effect 2022, but it is now 2022, so we're going to change the effective date to 2023, January 1.
Okay. Is that a conceptual amendment, or do we have that in our packet?
Actual paper amendment.
It is.
I believe.
I don't see it in my packet, but... Oh, this is it right here. I think I'm good. Okay. Well, and Representative Sponholz, just to reaffirm, you said it's a concept or it's a amendment that's more technical in nature, and you're okay with it.
We asked the sponsor of the amendment to make the amendment. The effective date in the bill, as it's currently written, is January 1, 2022, which we know has already passed. We want to give the department and the board time to make regulatory changes.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay, so I hear no objections to amendment number one. So with that, amendment number one to House Bill 111 has been adopted. And that takes us back to the bill. And we do have, as you mentioned, a number of people who are online available for questions. Let's see here. So first I think we'll take up public testimony, and then the folks who are available, they may want to provide some brief testimony, as I understand. So with that, we will go to public testimony first, and I will open public testimony to House Bill 111. And is there anybody in the room first who would like to testify on HB 111? Seeing none, I'm looking online here, and I do have folks who are designated as available for questions or available for testimony. I've got John Sazada, but I think they're part of your...
Just available for questions.
Questions, sure. Okay. So is there anybody else here? I've got Greg Johnson, who is also part of your questions lineup. I don't see anybody else online who would like to provide public testimony. Just to double check, is there anyone online? We see nobody online. So with that, public testimony on HB 111 is closed. And we will go to some professional testimony. So with that, is there any order? Oh, I thought maybe the folks that you had in the lineup here wanted to make some comments.
Chair, they're just available for questions at this point.
Oh, questions, okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, there is no public testimony, and we will move right over to the fiscal notes then. And we have Sarah Chambers, Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing Division Director from the Department of Commerce, available to review their fiscal note, and the control code on that is URQOX. So with that, Ms. Chambers, if you're online, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Sarah Chambers. I'm Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And we have a $1,700 fiscal note that would cover the cost for the dental board's regulations. That includes public noticing, printing, postage, and so forth. So it's a de minimis fiscal note, but we do want to make sure that we're transparent about the cost of doing business. Most of this cost, if not all of it, would be recovered through licensing fees.
Okay, do we have any questions on this fiscal note? Seeing none, thank you very much, Ms. Chambers. And so that'll take us over to the Department of Health and Social Services fiscal note. We have Renee Gayhart. She's the director of the Division of Health and Care Services, and she'll review the fiscal note with control code FHSNW. Ms. Gayhart, if you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, good morning, Chairman. My name is Renee Gayhart. I am the Division Director for Healthcare Services and the Department of Health and Social Services. And we do have a fiscal note, and it's primarily for reconfiguration in the Medicaid Management Information System, or basically putting a new provider type and allowing for claims processing through our MMIS with our fiscal agent conduit. So we would see an increase in claims. We'd have to add the provider type for the dental hygienist, and then we would also have to do provider enrollment of those new providers. So all of that said, the common costs that we incur whenever we put these into the MMIS, you can see it's about a $275,000 fiscal note. Yeah. Open for questions.
Okay, do we have any questions from the committee? See no questions. And so with that, thank you very much, Ms. Gayhart. So with that, if there are no questions on the bill itself, I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee. Representative Ortiz.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 111, version 32-LS0480/B from committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize Ledge Legal Services to make conforming changes.
Okay. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections to the bill, House Bill 111, version 32-LS0480/B has been moved from Finance Committee. So with that, if there's nothing else to come forth, thank you very much, Representative Sponholds.
Thank you very much, members of the committee. Appreciate your support.
And if there's nothing else to come for the committee, this concludes our agenda for the day. If folks could stick around just to sign the motion sheet. Our next meeting is scheduled for this afternoon at 1:30 p.m. We'll hear introductions of HB 187, which is the state agency publications, as well as HB 64, Fishery Development Association assessments, and HB 30, which is the workers' comp bill. So with that, we will be adjourned at 9:46 a.m. Thank you.